Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Gulbranson.
That was always my favorite part, when that piano comes in.
Yeah, that's intense.
It is. And you know what? That theme song, as a kid watching Monday Night Football, that was like, to me, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. It's like, it was such a special thing. It was, you were back in school that Monday, which sucked because the weekend was over. But man, you had football. It was under the lights. It was at home. Mom's cooking dinner in the background, or it's done and you just got full. Whatever it may be, it was always a very special thing. I don't know, Q, did you grow up the same way with that?
Yeah. I mean, Monday Night Football was a must. You know, I had it on all the time, and it didn't matter what I was doing or who was around. Monday Night Football was always on.
Yeah, you always, if you were outside playing football like I did all the time, either in the backyard or the street, you got inside right away to make sure you got the beginning of Monday Night Football. I always loved, and it's funny too, because John Gruden talked about it today. I always loved the highlights at halftime, because back then, for us old cats, you didn't get highlights every 5 minutes, and you certainly didn't get them on your phone because you didn't have a phone. But
right.
That's where you saw Sundays, because being younger, I couldn't stay up till 11 o'clock news on Sunday night to watch any headlines or highlights, and even then you only got a few games. So this was the first time you could see like highlights, and it was like, oh, who's that team? You know, because it's the Bengals. You never see the Bengals on TV. So that kind of stuff, you got to see teams you never got to see with that Monday Night Football halftime highlight. So, and a reminder that tomorrow's show is very Monday Night Football heavy, as we'll have the Monday Night Football game analyst, Lewis Riddick, who, of course, that's his first year in the booth for Monday Night Football. He's done one game so far, and they're going to start, they'll be here in Las Vegas as well. So Lewis Riddick will be with us, as will Omar Ruiz from the NFL Network. That's on tomorrow's show, so make sure tune in. Yeah, good stuff, man. It's going to be really, really good. But what we wanted to do is get your Raider memories of Monday Night Football. So call us 702-365-9200. And also just your general, like I shared about just coming home and watching the football, eating dinner back in the day when we'd pop the TV dinners in the oven before microwaves. And we would sit in front of the TV and watch football. So call us 702-365-9200. But Q, here's a Monday Night Football memory for the Raiders that I think everyone, and I'm sure especially Raider fans about your age, Q, maybe even a little younger, thanks to YouTube, this is one that I think most Raider fans remember because it was such an unbelievable moment in Raider Monday Night Football history.
Jackson to the 20 and out in front, and only one man to beat, and Easley can't run him down. He had the angle, but there goes Bo, and nobody catches Bo. Touchdown.
He may not stop till Tacoma. He's gone.
Portland.
He just went by Spokane.
And there go the Raiders into flying. What a scene.
Come on back, guys.
Oh, he was flying.
There you go. Bo Jackson, you remember that one, Q?
Absolutely. Ran up into the tunnel. That was great, man. That was a great. I mean, every Raider fan, regardless of your age, you've seen that highlight. You remember, if you were alive, you remember exactly where you were when that happened.
Yes, November 30th, 1987, that Monday Night Football. And we're going back on there. Even though he's breaking the rules, we have an unwritten rule. You can't call twice. No, I'm just kidding, Fabian. Fabian, who called in earlier, he's got a Monday Night Football memory that he's got to share with us. Fabian, you're back on, man. What's happening?
Hey, it's not a memory. I mean, I'm 60 years old. I remember the Raiders from the 70s. We're talking George Blanda coming off the bench, coming in to relieve LaMonica or Stabler when they got hurt. You lead the team down last minute, either scores a touchdown or kicks a 50-yard field goal. No soccer kick, straight on, toe on the ball, right through the uprights. George Blanda was God. The Raiders were Monday Night Football. They were the only, maybe one of the main reasons I didn't even know I was a Raider fan before that.
Yeah.
That solidified my Raider dumb.
Well,
it was great. And then besides Bo Jackson, you can't forget Jay Schrader Soros coming back down 24-0 at halftime and beating the Broncos on Monday Night Football.
Yes, and Fabian, I'll remind you too that, you know, the Raiders, and that's what I was talking about, like when I was a kid and I would watch the highlights at halftime because you couldn't get anything. So for folks that I talk to, especially if they're back east or the Midwest, and they were Raiders fans, it was primarily because of NFL film stuff, or it was because of Monday Night Football, because that's the only time you would see them.
Yeah, well, even if the Raiders weren't playing, again, like you said, that was the only way to get highlights from the league.
Yeah.
So you would, even if it was a snoozer game, or what do they call it, sleeper, or, you know, the go-nothing game, you still watched it for halftime to watch the highlights.
Well, and if you remember, the going back to 1972, since you'll remember, since you've been a fan since then, 1972, the last Monday Night Football game of that season, the Raiders down the Jets and Joe Namath 24-16 in Oakland. And that was that knocked the Jets out of the playoffs, Joe Namath out of the playoffs. And the Raiders, had the Raiders lost that game, they would have had to go to Miami for the playoffs to play the Dolphins, who were, of course, undefeated. And instead, they went and they played the Steelers that same season, and that didn't turn out well either. But, you know, the history, and Fabian, thanks for calling in, man. We always appreciate when you do. We're going to go out now. Ruben has some Monday Night Football memories here on the Silver and Black today.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Nah, I was calling because I heard the last hour about the drinks.
my man!
Back in my day, man, we used to get a cup from a Circle K and a foam, those fountain drink cups, and fill it up with beer. And I'm not saying I was underage, but we used to walk on the mall and drink with our fountain cups.
There you go. Out of the straws or no?
Yes, sir.
Oh, man.
You gotta drink it. Gotta drink it out of the straw.
Beer with a straw. Ruben, you are my hero, man. I love it.
Yeah, and also really
it just makes it look
Monday
natural.
Night, gonna meet up with the guys, Murph from Raiders Fan Radio. He's supposed to be in town. And we're supposed to meet up at Tommy Rockers, I believe, on Dean Martin. So
oh,
I might
nice.
Be checking out the game out that way.
Well, there you go. There's another option for folks. And I know our good friends over at the Stage Door Casino, I'm sure they're hurrying to get open as well. So, Ruben, thanks, man. If we don't talk to you before Monday, have a great time. Enjoy the game. We'll talk to you soon.
You two guys, go Raiders. And hopefully Stage Door is open because I know that's the Black Hole Vegas chapter spot. So hopefully they'll get to open up with the bars opening up.
It is, and they have those cool limited edition Modelo cans now available, as well as Coke cans and Dr. Pepper cans, all that stuff. All right, Snake Man's back on the line too. He's going to come in and give us his Monday Night memory. Snake Man, what's going on?
Hey, the Vivian told me it's in vogue to call back a second time in 25 minutes. So how about that?
Oh, Q has that effect on people. They just want to call.
I'm going to take you guys back even further. 1979. How could we forget? It was against the Saints. The Raiders were down something like 35-7 or some crazy stuff. They came back and won that game. They were 42-35.
Wow.
You remember that game?
Yeah.
If not, you're going to have to go on YouTube that one.
Q's always three.
I was.
I know.
You're only three? Okay, I really give up my age anyway. But, yeah,
that's okay.
I was 14, and I think that was Stables, one of his last years. I think because in 80, that's when they traded for Pastorini, and that was the year that he got hurt, and that was the year that Plunkett came in Game 5 and led the Raiders to their second Super Bowl, and they kicked ass that year. But that was the year just before, and I think Kenny Stabler was still our quarterback. It was an unbelievable game against the Saints. How about that? In the Superdome.
That's amazing. Thanks,
nice.
Snake, man. I appreciate it, man. Have a good night. What about you, Q? Is there, outside of the Jackson game, which obviously is a favorite of Raider fans, any game for you? I know Chris Chapman shared with us the Jets game, where Tim Brown broke the record, right, Chris? Because he's a Jets fan.
Well, I shared it with you. I didn't share it with Q, but I remember that game vividly. It was 2002. The Jets were rolling. It was Chad Pennington's first season as quarterback of the Jets, and the Jets were winning in the third quarter. I believe it was like 13-6 or 10-6 or something. Gannon was struggling. Then he completes that pass to Tim Brown, 1,000th reception, everything in that game changed after that because they stopped the game. He was the third guy to do it. I don't know why you right. stopped the game, but you bring his mom on the field in the golf cart. They give him a ball. He's the third guy to do it. If he's the first guy, I get it.
Yeah.
But the third guy.
Stop hating.
I'm not hating. I'm just saying. And then the Raiders end up winning the game. It was a close game, and the whole game changed after that. But that was a vivid memory for me.
That's because he played college ball for God's favorite team.
Notre Dame.
Exactly. So, but I won't go on my Notre Dame soapbox because it's not very sturdy at this point. But Q, what about you, man? What do you have a favorite Raiders memory or Monday Night Football memory?
Well, you know, to Fabian and Snake Man's credit, even though, like I said, I was only three when he was talking about the Monday Night Football game against the Saints, what I do remember most about Monday Night Football and the Raiders is that for the longest, they were the most dominant team. They had the best winning percentage of all professional football teams on Monday Night Football. Like Fabian said, they dominated Monday Night Football. I mean, it's almost like, oh, the Raiders are playing on Monday? That's a dub. You know what I mean? Yeah, that was the good days. Now, with that being said, I also remember a lot of bad memories. I remember Brett Favre, you know, the day after his father died. Mm-hmm. Remember that game?
Yes.
That was awful. I remember a game playing against the Kansas City Chiefs and Elvis Gerbach of all people, beat Eric Turner, rest in peace, and threw it over the top. And they won, I think Andre Bad Moon Rising caught the touchdown pass. That was terrible. I remember there's a lot of bad memories on Monday night as well.
Yeah, no, it's true. And also, you look at the Raiders have played the fifth most NFL or Monday Night Football games in league history now with 67. Okay?
Yep.
67. The first time they ever played on Monday Night Football, October 19, 1970, 34-20 win over the Washington football team, which was known by another name then. And did you know John Madden was an announcer on Monday Night Football?
I did.
Yes, you did. So
I heard he was pretty good.
He's not bad. He's not bad. But also, of course, then you have the John Gruden piece. And then when Monday Night Football moved from ABC to ESPN, where our guest tomorrow, Lewis Riddick, now is an analyst, the first ever Monday Night Football game on ESPN, they had a team that wore the silver and black, the Raiders versus the Vikings in 2006. And it was it was billed as the return of Randy Moss, who had joined the Raiders after he had been obviously with the Vikings. So
name has been banned.
Yes,
I can't mention him.
I understand. But it's amazing because the Raiders and Monday Night Football, it's something, you know, through this 15-year period where the Raiders have struggled, they've been spotty as far as being on national television. That's picked up as of late and clearly changing now that they're here in Las Vegas and with John Gruden as the coach and the team getting better. But the history of Monday Night Football cannot be written, nor can it be ignored, how significant the Raiders are to the history of the program. And because of that, their ratings have been high. Now, I know the ratings game changed in the digital age and it moved to ESPN. But still, the Raiders are a big draw. They will be, I'm telling you, I think Monday's game with the Raiders and the Saints will have very high numbers because you have a Hall of Fame quarterback, you have the Saints, and then you have the Raiders, and you have Las Vegas.
Right. I agree 100%. And you know what? It'll be even better when the team solidifies itself as a really good team and back to kind of getting back to the glory days of the Raiders where they dominated on Monday night. I mean, you see how many primetime games they have this season. They'll have more and more and more. I mean, as of late, because the team hasn't been good, the NFL hasn't been putting them on, except for maybe the second game Monday Night Football when they do the doubleheader just because they're that West Coast team and they just had to put a team out there, you know. But once they start being a dominant team again, they'll have them on primetime games all the time.
Well, no, and that's the thing is you with the Raiders, too, I think you have so much working in their favor now. But, yeah, and that's why I was a little disappointed. I mean, I would have loved to seen the Raiders now with everything that happened with the pandemic. It doesn't really matter. But I would have really liked to seen the Raiders, because it was a new NFL market, be the first Sunday night game. But, of course, they went with Los Angeles because the league and the Rams are in business together in L.A., let's face it. And it's a beautiful facility.
Well, and they're playing the Cowboys, too.
And they're playing the Cowboys. So your ratings are going to be massive, right? You have two of the largest television markets, the most popular the largest drawing team in the Cowboys. So clearly that's a made-for-TV event, but it would have been nice. But you know what? That's okay. We'll take Monday Night Football because it's a big deal. All right.
Yeah, it's a huge deal.
Yes, it is. It's very exciting. Chris.
I could give you another significant moment in Monday Night Football Raiders history, ironically also against the Jets.
Yeah.
October 9th, 1989, Art Shell makes his coaching debut against the Raiders or against the Jets on a Monday Night Football.
So
they won that game 14-7.
So his first game as Raiders head coach was against the Jets.
On a Monday night.
On a Monday night.
In 1989.
Wow, that's a big one.
Yeah, pretty significant.
That's a big one.
I thought he made his debut on a Monday night, and I was like, was it against the Jets? And I looked it up, and sure enough, it was against the Jets.
That's very cool. Look at that. Look at Chris, man. He's over there working
hard. He comes
hard.
To the clutch, man. That's
my,
why
sorry,
he's
my sorry Jets. Always making significant on the wrong side of history.
Oh, you mean your Jets, whose owner, GM, gave Adam Gase another...
Oh, let's not even open it.
All right. What's
He'll
your
be
Monday
fired
night?
By the bye week.
By the bye week, exactly. What's your favorite Monday Night Football memories, Raider memories? 702-365-9200 is the number. We'll take your calls and talk about that. But the Monday Night Football, too, you know, the thing, Q, is it's on ESPN now. They made that move because the ratings just weren't what it used to be as media got fragmented. It wasn't that football wasn't more popular, because football was more popular than ever on TV and all of that. But what it was is it's shifting patterns and more channels. People have more options. Has that taken anything away from Monday Night Football, especially now that they have the Sunday night and they make that the kind of marquee game of the week?
No, not at all. Monday night is still my go-to. The only night that I'm not a huge fan of is Thursday, to be 100% honest. Yeah. But I'll watch it, but I'm just not a big fan of it.
Yeah. No, Thursdays are tough, man. And, like, I mean, I like it, but I always find myself, unless it's a really big marquee matchup, like tonight's Bengals versus Browns, I'm kidding. I just don't pay. It's almost like white noise in the background, right? As I'm working or I'm doing something at home with the family. It's just not something that, it's not like Monday night or Sunday night where I want to sit down and watch the game. It's just never that, unless, you know, if it was the, I don't know, the Saints versus the Cowboys or a big matchup, something that you would want to schedule time in for, then it's a big deal. But I don't know. We'll see what happens. All right. We're going to step aside and take a break. We'll come back. We'll take your phone calls. We'll still take your Monday night memories. You can also text them to the Sam and Ash text line 69186. Or call us at 702-365-9200. If you call us, stay on the line. We'll get to you. Be a little patient, and we'll hear your Monday Night Football memories. You're listening to the Silver and Black Today here on Raider Nation Radio.
The autumn wind is a raider, and when it blows, it comes from the Las Vegas desert. Back to Silver and Black Today here on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Welcome back. Silver and Black Today here on this Thursday on your station. That's right. It is your personal station if you're a Raiders fan. And that is Raider Nation Radio 920. Scott Gilbranson along with Q Myers. We're talking about Monday Night Football memories, Raider Monday Night Football memories. And during the break, Q, real quick, Chapman and I were having such a great time. We were talking just like childhood stuff and talking about how we couldn't see highlights because there wasn't, you know, this big cable network, this networks that we have now. And it got us to conversation about getting like helmet Sundays and like how you used to get little helmet Sundays and you'd always want your team, or you'd always just get your team. And when you saw a different helmet, you'd be all excited because you don't get to see them that much, right? So it was just really fun to think about all those things, going to Kmart and getting ices with helmet cups and all kinds of cool stuff. I'm sure some of our listeners remember that. Listen, coming up in a few minutes, the Q-tip, where Q gets on his soapbox and gives us a bit of the truth. And but before that, the phone company called. They're mad at us because the phone lines are so jammed up. So we got to get to the phones. Raider 27, Monday Night Football memory, whether it be Raiders or otherwise. What do you got for us?
My Raider memory is the year after they won the Super Bowl, they had a Monday night game in Los Angeles. And me and two other guys from work took the afternoon off, drove down to L.A., and that was the very first NFL game I saw live.
Wow.
On Monday night, it was electric. It was amazing, the atmosphere and the excitement. And the Chargers were ahead almost the whole game until late in the fourth quarter. The guy sitting next to us, oh, Don't worry about it, guys. Don't worry about it. Raider football doesn't start to the last 2 minutes. And the end of the game, Plunkett threw a bomb to Cliff Branch, and he caught it on the sidelines right down below our seats. I'll never forget. We couldn't get over how big Cliff Branch's hands were. It's like he just covered up the whole football. And Marcus Allen went over with the winning touchdown, went over the top with 16 seconds left in the game.
Nice.
That was a fun ride home.
That is an awesome one. Raider 27, thanks, man. That's a great memory. Go out now to Raider C's. Raider C's, what's your memory?
Hey, well, maybe not a memory yet, but I'm thinking maybe this Monday the Raiders could end up doing a new experience using, you know, the Allegiant Stadium and what it could, you know, bring, which would be like, what if they actually embrace the pirate theme of the Raiders and, you know, on the big giant screen that they got outside, you know, you see like a pirate ship come in and like from the 15 people are driving, they can say, oh, look, that's a Raiders pirate ship showing up, meaning that the team's about to come out of the tunnel and start to show up. And inside you got, you know, the sound of thunder and lightning going and hear the autumn wind. And even the teams that are visiting, they're like, oh, damn. Who's about to come out that tunnel? You know, who'd they come in? You know, it's exciting. I'm looking forward to, you know, they're going to do something with this Monday night.
Yeah, see, it's going to be a good show. I know, having been in there for the scrimmages and whatnot, they were practicing a lot of it. They're still going to put on a big show, even though there's no fans there. But certainly without fans, it's not going to be as good as it was. But that's okay. We'll have the chance next year. Now we go back on the line for Raider Dave. Raider Dave, what do you got for us?
Hey, my Monday night experience was the opener last year. After over 50 years of following this team, I finally got to the opener, and I met JT Brick on the sidelines, told him it was my first time in Oakland, and he's like, you picked a good one, and he did. It was playoff atmosphere, and I think if fans were there Monday night, it would be playoff atmosphere there too. But you're right. Growing up through Monday Night Football, it was always just me, Dad. Mom always chose to work late that night because she knew what was going to be on TV. And he'd always break out, and we'd get Domino's pizza and just sit down and have a blast. And it's been that way forever. And my sister ended up visiting him this Monday and last Sunday, so I'm kind of jealous. I'd love to be able to watch it with him. But you're right about not getting any highlights. So we had to always wait till the following Saturday for this week in the NFL.
Yes.
And you'd finally see stuff after Cosell had already put some of the highlights on at halftime.
Yeah. No, in fact, thanks for the call, Ray Dave. In fact, during this pandemic, I started watching the Baseball Network, just to switch gears a little bit, and I was watching This Week in Baseball, which I grew up watching as well, and I loved as a kid with Mel Allen, and I watched, I don't know how many episodes, but man, it was cool. All right, we go back out to our good friend, Wally. Wally, longtime listener. What's up, my man?
Dude, I'm so old. You can tell Q-Ball this. I was the remote control. I used to have to get up and change the channel, and then I'd have to grab the rabbit ears and twist them until they were just in the right position to bring the game in. And that's the main thing I remember. Plus, of course, Cosell's, you know, his highlights at halftime were the only time he ever got them.
Yeah.
And the one reason I'm a Notre Dame fan is, do you remember, like, I think it was Saturday mornings or Sunday mornings early. There was like a half-hour show. I think Lindsey Nelson did the highlights of Notre Dame, and that was the only other highlights of football you saw on TV.
Yeah, absolutely. It was that, and if you lived in a local or close to a regional market for an NFL team or a big, big college like Notre Dame or Michigan, something like that, then you would get them. But other than that, you're right, Wally. And as always, man, appreciate the call. Okay, we'll go back out on the phone lines here. We'll get one in before we get to the Q-tip. And that is D. D, you're on with Q and Scott. Share with us your Monday Night Football memories.
Right on. My Monday Night Football memory would be the time when the Raiders went out to Denver and Ronald Corey snagged that one hand to grab in the snow and did snow angels. that was like by far like one of the best memories I had on Monday night. So
that's awesome, man. No, I appreciate
it. Who was the quarterback? Kerry Collins, right?
Kerry Collins.
Was he the quarterback then?
I'm going to look it up. That was 19.
I remember that game because the Raiders had no business winning that, according to everybody. And the Raiders went out there and they did the damn thing. And Ronald Curry had a heck of a game, topped off by that big one-handed catch.
Well, and again, the Raiders have played the Broncos, out of the 55 times they've been on Monday Night Football, they've played the Broncos the most, and that is 18 times. And that makes sense. I mean, they're in the division, and that was a great rivalry, and both teams were good as well. We're going out on the line, too, bringing in a guy, Trucker Jim. Trucker Jim, what's up, man?
Hey, a lot of great memories. I loved it back then. I graduated high school in 77, so I go back a ways.
Dang,
nice. And the most proud I've ever been of the Raiders in my entire life was they were really playing great down the stretch, and they had beat the Steelers in the first game of that season. They had scored 17 points in like the last few minutes to pull out a win. Well, Cincinnati was like fighting Pittsburgh for first place. Pittsburgh had a little bit of a slump early that year, and if the Raiders lost to Cincinnati, they wouldn't have had to play Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
But they went out and they creamed Cincinnati, and I was so proud because the fans were chanting, "We want Pittsburgh. We want Pittsburgh." It would have been, they had to beat Pittsburgh to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. That's awesome. By the way, Jim, are you a truck driver?
Yes.
Thank you for what you do, man. You keep the whole country running. We appreciate it, especially during this pandemic. It's been amazing what you guys have done.
Well, they pay us to do it.
Yes, I know they pay you to do it, but still, if you don't go to work, a lot of people, we wouldn't just be short on toilet paper, we'd be short a lot more. So thank you, man, and we appreciate you calling in.
Hey,
yeah,
I'll take it. My parents live in Summerlin.
Oh, okay.
And I got to see the stadium being built in stages, you know, in like when it first started, and seeing it from then until now. And I did a delivery in Oakland last week, and what a cesspool near the Oakland Coliseum. It is so run down. It's a shame.
Yeah, it's too bad. Such good people up in Oakland, good football fans. And Jim, thank you again for your call, man. But Q, man, Monday Night Football, it just brings up a lot of memories for folks, generational, family, everything.
Yeah, and you know, we had that call earlier about last year's, you know, against the Denver Broncos. And yeah, that was a heck of a game, but it was topped off by probably the best play of the Raiders had in 2019. That was that Dwayne Harris 99-yard punt return. Remember that one?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, and you just
That was insane.
You don't see returns like you used to anymore. I mean, not just kick returns, we know, because of the rule change, but even punt returns as these players have gotten faster. I mean, you know, you don't just roll out guys on special teams anymore. You have a lot of talented guys out there. But it's really interesting. We certainly appreciate you guys sharing your memories with us, and we're going to be talking more about Monday Night Football again tomorrow's show. Lewis Riddick, who is the now in-game analyst for ESPN Monday Night Football, he'll be with us, as well as Omar Ruiz from the NFL Network, who also covers the game, and it's going to be a good show, so don't miss that. Maybe another surprise, too, that I'm working on. I can't tell you yet, but we're working on it. But what we're going to do now is we're going to turn over the microphone, and we're going to give Q his time. We're going to throw you, if I could spit it out, had a brain fart there, to the Q-tip.
I can't hear you, Peach.
It's time to listen up, Raider Nation.
Can't hear you, Peach.
Clear out those ears and get ready for the Q-tip. Your boy Q's daily take on what you need to hear.
That very precision seems to drive Q-tip fans right over the edge.
Like it or not.
This one's going to be just a pretty simple one today. Had a couple different things I was thinking about, you know, just kind of jonesing on, deciding what I was going to mention. But you know what? Let's just go ahead and show some love, man. How about kicker Daniel Carlson? AFC Special Teams Player of the Week. He scored 10 points for the Raiders on Sunday and included a career-long 54-yard field goal. And I don't know about you guys, but the minute that they trotted him out there on the field, I just knew he was not going to make that kick.
Really?
There's just no way. He was 0-for last year. You know, I mean, he made some 50-yarders his first year with the Raiders, but last year he was 0-for, and he's never kicked a 54-yarder in his career. I had no confidence at all, and all he did is go ahead and drill it right down Main Street. And, you know, I think that gets overlooked quite a bit. I love that the fact that the NFL gave him AFC Special Teams Player of the Week, and it's only right that I give him some props because he came through in the clutch.
You know, when they signed him, when we used to do our show weekly, when they signed him, I said he would. I actually like Carlson. I think he got run out of Minnesota a little too early, and then he made me look bad last year because of all that.
Yeah, he was rough last year.
He was, and the kid is really, really talented. I hope this year he really does put it together, has more weeks like he had in week one, because when you can roll out your kicker and you just don't worry. I mean, you saw Steve Gostkowski, right, from the Patriots now, go out for the Titans and just have a horrific. It got painful to watch. You know what I mean? It wasn't even
yips.
You didn't want to make fun of him. It just felt so terrible. And then he was able to win the game with the last kick. But it's one of those deals where if you don't have to worry about your kicker 99% of the time, it's all good, right? Especially John Gruden with a young team, big night against the New Orleans Saints, veteran quarterback, veteran defense. The last thing you want to worry about is your kicker.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, think about this. In 2019, Carlson was 6-for-10. From 40 to 49 yards. That's not even 50.
No.
You know what I mean? And he missed four. And then from 50 plus, he was 0-for-2. So he goes out there and drills a 50 pluser with no preseason, no real, you know what I mean? I know he did some stuff in training camp, but still, it's difficult. And oh, by the way, earlier in the game, as a extra point, the ball was rolled back to the holder. And they still found a way to get the ball through the uprights. So you got to give them props on that as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, that's what you got to be able to do. But we're still getting calls in. So 702-365-9200 if you want to share Monday Night Football memories. You know, the one thing, too, that I remember, and it was because I was too young to kind of understand it at the time, although I knew who he was, because my parents had very diverse music listening, right? They listened to everything from James Brown, Etta James, to John Lennon, to Elvis, to Bread. I mean, you name it. They just listened to everything, right? And I remember I was out with my mom during a Monday Night Football. We came home. I was small. I was, 10 years old maybe. And we came home, and my dad was sitting in front of the TV. And it was the night that John Lennon was shot, and Howard Cosell announced it to the country, really, on Monday Night Football as well. So the cultural phenomena and kind of intertwining that Monday Night Football and the NFL have had with American culture really is significant.
It is. It's big. It's a big deal, man. I mean, Monday Night Football is just kind of like a staple in most American households. You know, just simple as that. It's just one of those things that you knew. It's Monday night. It's what you tune into.
Absolutely. So we look ahead to the Raiders and the Saints, and we will do that, of course, tomorrow. Lewis Riddick and Omar Ruiz will be with us. We're going to step aside for a quick break. When we come back, we're going to take you home to the top of the hour. Still taking your calls, 702-365-9200. The Sam and Ash text line, if you want to reach out that way, 69186. You're listening to The Silver and Black today from Sam and Ash here on Raider Nation Radio.
Welcome back to Silver and Black Today. Here's Scott Gulbranson and Q Myers.
This is a chill beat, man. I like this song. Chapman's on point. My homeboy.
Or I'm moving our necks, man.
We go back like the Commodores, man. Who would have known we would have broke up?
We all thought you were a brick house.
I mean, you know, I got my moments.
I got you. We're back, Silver and Black today here on Raider Nation Radio. Q and Scott are with you as we take you home here in the final bit of the show as we lead up to your time with Vinny Bonsignor. Of course, In the Huddle comes up next. If you haven't heard Vinny yet, you got to do it. He has this co-host. You may have heard of him. I don't know. He was okay. Lincoln Kennedy. Of course, I kid.
Glad you're in studio talking about you okay.
I let him in the studio today, as a matter of fact. Lincoln was outside, and he couldn't get in.
Damn right, so you let him in.
That's right.
You going to tell that man no?
Well, I told him. I said, look, for once, I'm throwing blocks for you. Right?
The thing about it is, Scott, you didn't have to let him in, because if you had tried to get out, then he's there waiting for you. So that could have been a problem. So you made the good business decision Like Cam Newton in the Super Bowl when he chose not to jump on the ball, he made a business decision.
Yeah,
you did the same thing.
All I know is that if ever I'm going somewhere, I would like to go with Lincoln, and I would like to literally, just like I was a running back, just walk directly behind him at all times, because wherever he's going, they're going to clear space, right?
Of course. And show him love.
Yeah. Oh, he's one of the nicest human beings you'll ever meet in your life.
Yeah, he's awesome.
What a great guy. But we are talking Raider football. We're still taking some of your messages. I know we had some folks call in, and a couple of them bounced off. If you want to call back in, 702-365-9200 is the number. The phone company hates us because you guys want to share so much. But Q, as we look at that injury report, we'll ask Vinny when he comes on. Look at the injury report, but I think people get a little too focused on that. Yeah, if you're missing a big player, yeah, that hurts. But you got to go to battle with the guys you have. So for the Raiders, whoever is out there on the field, I think that whole idea of the defensive line playing better, Q, is a key issue. And we'll play you some audio tomorrow, because Max Crosby talked about it today. He talked about how he didn't play how he wanted to, and even some of the journalists had asked, hey, listen, you know, is that because now you're being targeted? People know who you are now. You're not just this fourth round unknown pick. And he said, no, man, they did it to me last year. It's not on them. It's on me. I know what's coming. So it was good to hear, Q, these young players, they're recognizing what the issue is, and they're going to work.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing about it, man. I mean, Max Crosby had a really good rookie year, you know, and his goal and his job is to, you know, continue that, you know, build on that, show that consistency. And so, yeah, he's right. You know, these guys are going to key in on him. They're not going to just let him get off and be the dude. You know, they're going to really focus. So he's got to continue to, you know, get better and improve. And it just looked like a lot of guys were out there thinking they weren't quite as quick as they should have been.
All right. We are now joined, as we are every day, as he gets ready for a show, because he doesn't just want to do 2 hours. He wants to do 2 hours and 15 minutes. And that is Vinny Bonsignore, of course, who is the Raiders writer for the Las Vegas Review-Journal and the host of In the Huddle, coming up with Lincoln Kennedy at the top of the hour. Vinny, the injury report comes out, the early injury report. We got a long way to go, but anything on there that surprised you, that worries you?
Well, those are two different questions. No real big surprises. Worried? Yeah, absolutely. And I think Raider fans need to be concerned right about now. I guess if there's one silver lining, it doesn't seem like all these injuries are like, you know, season threatening injuries. So that's good news. And if you're going to have these kinds of injuries, probably best to get them out of the way as early as possible. But on the other hand, going into a Monday night football game against the New Orleans Saints, you hate to be shorthanded or banged up, but that's the reality of the situation. I think, you know, I just wrote about Denzel Good and what he did in relief at right tackle. It's next man up. I know that's a cliche, but he personified that on Sunday, the ability to go in and play a position that he hadn't even practiced and excel, and the Raiders didn't miss a beat. And they're going to need, it looks like, some guys to do just that on our Monday night against the Saints.
What's your gut feeling when it comes to Henry Ruggs? Because that's one of the guys who obviously is on the injury report with a knee injury. He didn't practice today. He didn't get any touches, no touches after halftime on Sunday. I'm concerned about him. What is your level of concern?
Yeah, I can't gauge the level of concern, but here's what I will say. What worried, I think, everybody was, yeah, he came back out and played. He gutted it out, and that's a good sign. But you always knew a cross-country flight back home to Las Vegas. And then, you know, the days following that, the one thing that happens is that's when the knee tightens up, the knee swells up, whatever, you know, the ramifications are from an injury like that. Could take place once, you know, he settles down and sits down and you know, moves off of the game. The adrenaline stopped everything. So that's the thing that I was concerned about was, all right, what's it going to look like in a day or two? What kind of impact is that injury going to have moving forward? And obviously he didn't practice today. Could be precautionary. These teams are very, very guarded in how they, you know, assess these injuries and explain these injuries. And really they're under no obligation to say anything. Just, well, read it. That's the information you could go on. That's all we're giving you. So, but yeah, I mean, a wide receiver, a knee, came back into a game, and I wouldn't say he wasn't the same, but he certainly didn't get any touches. He was more of a decoy at that point than an actual participant in the game plan. So I'm concerned.
Vinny Bonsignore is our guest. He will be also at the top of the hour with Lincoln Kennedy for In the Huddle. And Vinny, you talked about Denzel Good. What's the indication now? What are you hearing? Are they going to activate Brandon Parker most likely?
They're going to have to.
They're going to have to, right? Because Good is not going to play tackle again.
I don't know.
Maybe.
You know, I mean,
we haven't seen practice. So
yeah, right, exactly. And he played so well in relief, maybe with a week. And he has played tackle. That's the, you know, I heard somebody said that he hadn't played tackle ever before. Well, he was a college tackle, and he played tackle with the Indianapolis Colts, none of which negates what he did on Sunday or minimizes what he did on Sunday, because the fact is, and as I talked to him about this, you know, as you go through a practice week, you know, you're preparing for one position. You're preparing for your position, guard. When he was studying the opponent, the Carolina Panthers, he was, you know, just marginally looking at the exterior defenders, the defensive ends, outside linebackers, and almost exclusively on the interior. So, you know, he told me when he got in the game, he had to do like a mental rundown. And what do I remember from the little bit that I studied, you know, the outside players? And, you know, his conclusion was they were pretty fast. I remember that. They were pretty fast. So, you know, but he had to switch gears in terms of what he was preparing for to play a whole different position. Now you give him a week, and he's going to be on top of all of that. And it's not going to be some kind of a shock to the system for him to get in there if need be. And I think he played so well that it makes you wonder, all right, you know, maybe that's the direction to go. And the problem with that is it becomes the problem that it became on Sunday. What if he were to go down? And then what if a guard were to go down? Now, right. Who's going to play guard? And in that scenario, I don't think Brandon Parker could play guard. I mean, he's just – that's just not his skill set, his body type. I mean, if in an emergency situation, he would have to do it. But you have to start thinking about those things as well. So the good playing tackle, there's stuff to like about, especially coming off a strong game that he played. But at the same time, you have to start thinking about the ramifications of what could happen, because we saw what could happen on Sunday.
Right, exactly. And look, I'm not trying to rush this guy onto the field. I know the Raiders will get him out there when they get him out there and feel comfortable. But do you anticipate possibly seeing Amik Robertson on Monday?
You know, that's interesting as well. He didn't play. He was suited up, but he didn't play on Sunday. That was kind of conspicuous to me. But I don't know. You know, it sometimes takes guys a little bit longer at this level. And, man, you know... Well, now here's one thing, and I always think of this type of stuff. Here's a kid who grew up in Louisiana. Here's a kid who I'm sure grew up a Saints fan. I mean, it was mm-hmm. right in his back door. Played college in Louisiana. You would imagine that there's some motivation there, so maybe you feed off of that a little bit and maybe throw him in there for the first time against the team that he probably grew up rooting for. But here's what I also know. There's reasons why guys play. There's reasons why guys don't play. And for whatever reason, the coaches didn't believe that he was ready to step on the field on Sunday in a major way, or even in a reserve way. So that's usually pretty telling. But I also know this, you know, as the days go on, as the practices go on, as the weeks go on, guys get better if they're diligent and professional. Right. And sooner or later, they announce themselves that they're ready to play. And every coach that I've ever talked to about this said, look, I don't make the decision on playing, on who's playing or not. Players usually make that decision. So they make it obvious when they're ready. And conversely, they make it obvious when they're not ready as well.
Now the Raiders,
Joyner looked good anyway.
Yeah. I'm. You know what? Thank you for saying that. And I'm a big fan of LaMarcus Joyner. Last year, notwithstanding, he didn't play well. But he was also making a position switch. And there was a lot going on last year. Who knows where he was physically. There could have been some of that going on. I just remember him from when I covered the Rams, and pound for pound, and dudes would say this in the locker room, he was as tough as they come. He was one of their he was their toughest player pound for pound on that roster. And that's a roster that had guys like Aaron Donald and Todd Gurley, Michael Brockers, on and on and on. So that dude can play, and he's tough, and I think he's in a really good position at that position, because you saw what he was able to do, not just in coverage, but also as a run defender as well.
Now, Vinny, the Raiders brought in, and all teams bring in players for workouts all the time. Raiders brought in Jahlil Adai earlier in the week, right, at a safety position. He used to play for the Texans and the Chargers. Any movement there that you're going to see? I know the Eric Harris performance last week, and Eric is a good player, good guy, but they're obviously concerned. Any movement there that you're hearing about?
Not necessarily at that position, but nothing surprises me. And, you know, I think for now that the Raiders are in Las Vegas And if you're in Las Vegas and you're following a professional team for the first time, like religiously and day after day after day, that just happens. Tuesdays, guys come in, man. It's a revolving door of guys that are coming in to be tried out and worked out, because you're always trying to stay ahead of the curve, because we saw what happened on Sunday. Guys mm-hmm. dropped like flies. So whether it's to bring in a guy literally to sign right now, or just to get an eyeball on him and see, okay, if A, B, and C were to happen, hey, we might have an option on this guy. We liked what we saw on the practice field. That's just the way it is. And so you're going to see guys coming in and out as far as getting tried out, getting looked at. It doesn't mean that they're unhappy with the position. Sometimes it does mean that. Oftentimes it's just for coverage. It's just staying a step ahead of the posse in order to be prepared for whatever might happen. And again, we saw whatever can happen on Sunday.
We sure did. What do you got coming up on the show with Lincoln today?
Well, we're going to talk, obviously, about Monday Night Football. We're going to talk about Drew Brees. We're going to get into the injury report, which is extensive, to say the least, after 1 week. Although, you know, let's think about this. That was probably somewhat to be expected, right? I mean, guys just weren't where they normally would be physically. And maybe the bigger guys, they're a little bit more prone to something because for everything that they were coming off. So going to get into that. We're also going to talk to Eric Grubman, from former vice president of the NFL, whose face I can see when I look at Allegiant Stadium and when I look at SoFi Stadium. He was front and center, a huge part of both of those projects, and love talking to him. One of the smartest guys I've ever met. You guys remember in New Orleans when the lights went out in the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Eric Grubman, who was a former Navy captain, went to Naval Academy in his suit. Went down there and tried to get it figured out with the electricians. So he is a man of multiple skills, and it's fascinating always to talk to him.
That's awesome. And I have heard rumors that you're going to play rhythm guitar for the Killers on the roof. Is that true?
No. I think I've got some other responsibilities on Monday night.
I thought they were going to helicopter you over.
No, I'll leave that to the professionals, but I'm looking forward to I'll tape it and watch it when I get home.
There you go. Vinny Bonsignore coming up next with Lincoln Kennedy on In the Huddle. Q, my friend, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Big show.
Absolutely. Appreciate you, Vinny. Have a great show.
All right. There you go. You've been listening to Silver and Black today, powered by Sam and Ash, injury attorneys. Make sure you give them a call. Talk to you tomorrow.